I'm going to call to order the Legacy Committee meeting, April 3rd, 2019. We don't have a quorum yet, so we're going to skip approval of the minutes for the moment and move right into talking about presentation on House File 653. Chair Lilly, would you like to move that House File 653? Oh, never mind. Don't have a quorum. Can't do that. So we're going to do the presentation first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I know we're coming off a session, and everything today is quite busy with the State of the State tonight and all the deadlines, but this is a major part of the legacy bill is our Parks and Trails a piece of it, and so I'm honored to carry the bill or for the entire package, I believe. So, and I have some presenters here from all three areas of the funds as they exist right now, and most likely will to continue. If you will, if it's okay with the chair, I'd like you to start with the DNR, and they can go through their presentation. And thank you for allowing us to start, because we have a full agenda. So thank you.
Yep, whoever's up next, if you just introduce yourself, name, and then you can begin.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon. My name is Erica Rivers. I am Director of Minnesota State Parks and Trails. Thank you for your time and attention today and inviting us to give a presentation on the legacy Parks and Trails part of the fund. I'm here with my colleagues. We have been working together in a very collegial, collaborative way over the last 8 years to ensure that what we produce or what we use these legacy funds for provides the greatest benefit to the state of Minnesota and all of the interested parties that are interacting and working to provide outdoor recreation in Minnesota. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Lisa Brejes and Renee Mattson to introduce themselves.
Thank you. I'm Lisa Barajas. I'm the Community Development Director at the Metropolitan Council, and we work on the regional park system in the metro area.
Good afternoon. Renee Mattson. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission.
So to get us started on legacy, as many of you are familiar with, the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund focuses on parks and trails of regional and state significance, and that's defined in the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan. These parks and trails are large-scale, meaning they have a large land base, they're natural resource-based, and they serve a regional audience. So while essential elements of a high-quality outdoor recreation system, parks of local significance and national significance are not eligible to receive legacy funding. And many of you may be familiar with the vision, but I just want to highlight a portion of that. The Parks and Trail Legacy Plan lays out a very powerful vision for Minnesota parks and trails. And that second sentence there is really quite important, that they create experiences that inspire a legacy of stewardship for the natural world, and they provide fun outdoor recreational opportunities that strengthen friendships, families, health, and spirit now and into the future. So this vision really seeks to establish an inclusive, coordinated, and seamless system of outdoor recreation for all Minnesotans.
Four strategic pillars really frame our plan, and that would be, these pillars are really important, particularly I think the first one, which is connecting people to the outdoors with all of the good work that we do or try to do, of course. Getting people actually out and enjoying what we're doing in the parks and trails is the most important piece. Also, acquiring land and creating opportunities, taking care of what we have, another huge piece. Building it is one thing, making sure we maintain them in pristine order is another equally important pillar. And finally, coordinating with partners, and that's a good example of what we all are doing here today, working in the collegial spirit, as Erica had mentioned, and hoping to do the best for all of Minnesota.
Thank you, Renee. So as some of you will recall, and if Representative Erdahl was in the room, he would remind folks that back in 2011 and 2012, there was somewhat of a rocky start with this fund and a lot of back and forth regarding how to split up the funds. And so wisely in 2011, the legislature asked all of the coordinating agencies to get together and work with one another to come up with a funding strategy that everybody could agree to, and that's what became of that was the 40-40-20 split. And the reason the three of us can be sitting here today in this very collegial collaborative spirit is because we worked it out several years ago how to best divide these funds and work with the state of Minnesota. Just to refresh everyone's memory here, there was a report written back in 2011 that outlines why the 40-40-20 came about, and if you ever are interested in looking at that, you know, we can definitely refresh your memory on how that occurred. And then if we just switch to the next slide. This last year, we've really been taking stock of the legacy funds and parks and trails in particular. It's the 10-year anniversary. Many of you joined us out at the History Center several weeks ago to celebrate the 10-year anniversary. But last year, the Parks and Trails group actually got together and did a whole series of celebrations across the state of Minnesota, not just in the metropolitan area, to get hear the voice of all of the customers and visitors that we serve across the state. We held 9 events, 8 of them in greater Minnesota, 7 of them in greater Minnesota. We interacted with, in one way or another, 12,000 people and actually just took a pulse of where we are. Are we doing the right thing by the citizens of Minnesota and how we're spending these dollars? And got a lot of really great feedback. That feedback, I think you guys have this, or was this passed out, Renee, is in this report here. It outlines what the public told us about how we're spending our legacy dollars, and we all have been reflecting on some of the information that has come out of those interactions in determining how we allocate dollars for the next biennium. What we learned from that interaction is that Minnesotans, of course, really care about their natural resources and parks and trails in particular. They live the spirit of the true north. And outdoor recreation, they really value us taking care of the system, the beautiful system that we have here in Minnesota. They have a lot of pride and understanding of the health and wellness benefits of our state parks and trails, or our parks and trails of regional significance as well. So we heard a lot of affirmation about the legacy, the pillars that Renee mentioned in this original report, and we heard loud and clear from them that they want us to continue to follow the legacy plan and be accountable to it. The next part of the presentation, we're just going to take an opportunity to quickly run through each of the systems and how we propose to allocate the 2020 and 2021 legacy funds. This first slide here, with parks and trails, just outlines that we have a very big, beautiful state park and trail system. It's 125 years old. We have 75 state parks and recreation areas, 2,900 miles of authorized state trail. We also manage a big water recreation as well as motorized and non-motorized trail system within the state of Minnesota. This next slide really just shows how we have historically spent legacy funds for parks and trails, and it breaks it down by pillar. Connecting people to the outdoors is about 16% historically, acquisition and development around 26%, taking care of what we have historically been about 56%, and coordinating with partners is an off-the-top appropriation that just flows through DNR, but is used for all of us to sit together and work like this with one another. As far as connecting people to the outdoors, we heard loud and clear last year in all those 10-year legacy events that people value this, and so we will continue to invest in those kinds of connections. We use, some of you will have seen the ICANN programs at the Rotunda last week, a major part of what we do of connecting people. We also have a multicultural program, both with multicultural media investments as well as programs to reach out to multicultural audiences that are part of our investments with connecting people. As far as acquiring land and creating new opportunities, that's the second pillar in the legacy funds. Some of those dollars are spent. The blue is in acquisition. And the green on this pie chart is for creating new opportunities. Things you'll see invested in here are Cuyuna Lakes continuing investment in the mountain bike trails there, and also a new campground at Split Rock Lighthouse, which has been an underserved campground for many years. as far as taking care of what we have, about 58%. We heard loud and clear from that engagement that we did last year that the public wanted us to spend a little bit more dollars in our natural resource. This is both our built infrastructure and our green infrastructure that comes out of this pillar. And so we are making a little bit larger investment this year, or plan to make a little larger investment this year in our natural resource program out of these funds. Taking care of what we have really is focused on campground restoration work at St. Croix and Whitewater State Parks, as well as shower buildings. It's one of the biggest things I hear about in my job is how the bathrooms look and how the showers function in our campgrounds. So we have been making a very purposeful investment in taking care of those facilities for our public. And then finally, I always get questions about how we make the decisions about what to invest in with Legacy. This is really almost a year-long process that we go through every year. Starting in about March, our first thing is to actually take and review the Legacy plan with our senior management team at DNR and take stock of where we are. How are we doing with all the strategies and priorities that were outlined here? Then we then do a data call-in from our field to in various areas where we think in each of those pillars we need to invest, and we get a whole suite of really great projects, usually about 4 or 5 to 1 as far as the money we have to spend, and we put the highest priority ones on the top. And then we take it back to our Legacy Advisory Committee and let them have a look at what we're planning on investing in, some give and take there at that Legacy Advisory Committee, and then once the governor's information comes in on what the budget's going to be in November, we have more specific numbers and can and select projects. So it's about a year-long process. We then send to all of you, then the chairs of the committees, a report. All three agencies do this. It looks like this for DNR, and that outlines how we have invested the dollars previously, as well as our intentions for the next biennium, and then we follow that plan pretty rigorously through the biennium. With that, I'll turn it over to Lisa.
Thank you. And if you'd go to the next slide. We work well together. Thank you. So the Greater Minnesota system is the youngest, in some ways also the oldest, as we brought in facilities throughout the state that have been well established. Currently, our system is continuing to grow and develop with 59 designated regionally significant parks and trails throughout the state of Minnesota. The commission, along with input and guidance from our 6 district planning committees, annually reviews our strategic initiatives that are set forth for each district. And those districts each look at what's missing and the gaps within their district and set initiatives based on what they need. We all know Minnesota is a very diverse state, so our 6 districts are very diverse in and among themselves. And we do a designation review and approval process for parks and trails that meet our strategic criteria in our strategic plan. And that's an ongoing work product. And we continually look at those criteria and update them. In fact, we're going through a strategic update plan at this time because things have changed in the last 4.5 years. So we're always mindful of the fact that we need to take a look at what we're doing and make sure it's meeting the needs of everyone in Greater Minnesota. And what's before you now is the a showing of where those facilities are across the state in the 6 districts. Obviously, some are more richly filled right now than others, but we're working with all of our district planning committees to seek out facilities that fill gaps within those districts. This slide is a representation of what we've done from 2016 to 2019. We've had a lot of good success. And we're proud of those successes and look to do more, of course. And also our funding recommendations for FY20. The commission received 21 funding requests in excess of $21 million. Clearly, our budget at 8.6 for this year was not quite that. But of the 21 funding applications we received, we were able to fund in whole or in part 11 applications. And it's really important to note some of the numbers there. We don't have a cap on the amount that we can award for grants. So we are able to get larger funding recommendations, submissions and recommendations off, built, and the public can be enjoying those rather than being on that constant $200,000 grant cycle, which is wonderful, but for Greater Minnesota, we're able to make impacts in those communities right off the bat. So we have these 11 recommendations that run the gamut from a $2 million recommendation down to $27,000 for an equally important project, which is replacing the electrical services in a campground. So we're proud of the work we're able to do there. And that is some of the output of what we do. Smiling faces at the end of the day, having fun in the parks, which is exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Thank you, and I have the pleasure of rounding out our presentation today and talking about the metro area. We're kind of in the middle. We're not the oldest system and we're not the youngest system, but we certainly are large. Metropolitan Council plays the regional planning role in the metro area as directed by statute passed in 1974. The Metropolitan Parks Act directs the council to both the, plan for the long-range regional parks and open space system in collaboration with the regional parks implementing agencies, which is what you see on the map here today. There are 10 of those agencies in the metro area, and those 10 agencies actually own and operate all of the regional parks and trails in the metro area. The purpose of the system in the metro area is really to serve as the state park system for this particular population. As you, many of you may know, there are more than 3 million residents today in the metro area, and we're expecting to add another 700,000 or so over the next 20 years. So we are an existing system that will continue to grow, and we're working in close collaboration with our implementing agencies to support that growing population and growing demand. So our system today has 44 regional parks, 12 park reserves, which are quite large scale in nature and have a very large nature-based portion of them set aside for conservation. We also have 8 special recreation features, which include things like Como Zoo, so a little bit of a different take of connecting with nature and with the outdoors. And then our regional trail system, where we have currently almost 400 miles of regional trails, is where a lot of our focus over the next many years will be in connecting all of our regional parks around the metro area to one another with regional trails. So today we have almost 55,000 acres of parkland, and we're expecting that to grow to serve our growing population. Just a point of fact so folks are aware of that, that while our population is growing, you can see that our visitation to the regional park system has grown quite exponentially over the years as well. So while in 1974 we had about 5 million visitors to the regional park system, by the time we get to 2017, just the Minneapolis Chain of Lakes Regional Park alone had over 7 million annual visits. So our system is well loved. Folks are clearly connecting with the outdoors within the metro area, are taking advantage of these recreation opportunities and more than once, and not just in the metro area, not just residents there, but residents from outside the metro area, from greater Minnesota, and even some of our hopefully out-of-town visitors who might be in town for our Final Four weekend, for example, also taking advantage of the great outdoor opportunities for recreation right next to other great activities in the built-up part of our region. So the way we select projects is a little bit different than our other two agencies because it is very clearly laid out in statute how the funding splits work. State statute indicates that 90% of the Parks and Legacy Fund is distributed non-competitively. It's done by formula that's also in statute, and that goes to each of the 10 implementing agencies. And then another 10% of the total Parks and Trail Legacy Funds for the metro area is kind of taken off separately and used on a first-come, first-served basis for land acquisition. As I mentioned earlier, our system continues to grow to continue to meet the needs of the growing metro population. And just as a note, the council does match those acquisition funds on a 3-to-2 basis with our regional bonds in order to really make that opportunity go even further for our implementing agencies. So while we don't do a application selection process like our sister agencies do, we do go through a process of master planning that our implementing agencies plan for each of the regional parks and regional trails in the metro area. They engage with local residents and other interested stakeholders on the types of activities, programming, restoration, all of the things that are needed to make that park or trail meet local needs and regional needs. They develop that plan, get their local board's approval on that plan, and then bring it forward to the council for review and approval as well. So kind of multiple multiple levels of engagement that go just into the master planning process. The projects that then are supported by legacy funds are consistent with those master plans and have to be a part of those master plans in order to receive funding through Parks and Trail Legacy Funds and actually through most of our other funding opportunities as well. So the projects cover generally a wide range of opportunities that fit into each of those pillars that the Legacy Fund indicates. So things like taking care of the outdoors, connecting people to the outdoors and taking care of what we have, really looking at kind of like what Erica was saying, taking care of facilities that we already have. Some of our bathrooms are where I know our implementing agencies also hear a lot about that. Even just making our facilities more accessible for residents to actually get to, whether they're, you know, bringing children in strollers or they're in a wheelchair or have other mobility issues, helping folks to actually have the access and ability to connect with the outdoors right in their backyards. So some of those other opportunities that are there are types of projects that are listed there, but the agencies within their master plans have really considered the full range of opportunities that would help make both the parks, existing parks that we have, better, the natural resource portions better, as well as the facilities better to better meet the needs of our users. So we really appreciate your opportunity to hear from us today, and I'm really excited about moving forward with this, and we're certainly happy to take any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you for walking us through that. Very informative for those of us who are new here. We are going to take member questions, and I think Representative Green had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question would be for Director Rivers. You had said that there's 75 state parks and recreation areas. Is that including or not including the metro?
Ms. Rivers? Madam Chair, members, that is not including. That's just the state system.
Representative Green, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and that's what I, you know, that's what I figured. I wanted to make sure that I was right on that. So, for 80 counties, we have 75 parks and recreational areas. Can you tell me maybe an updated number on how many of those make money and how many lose money?
Ms. Rivers.
Madam Chair, members, I don't have that number in front of me right now. That changes from year to year. I know you have requested that before, Representative Green, and we'd be happy to provide that again for you.
Representative Green?
Madam Chair, and thank you for that. I would really appreciate that. This is the last numbers that I have is that 51 of the parks and recreation areas were losing money, and they were losing like $6.5 million. And the only thing that saved it is, well, my park, Itasca, which is great. But the remaining 20-some parks that actually made $3 million. And so we had a net loss of $3.5 million in our park systems. Now, I realize that you know, parks aren't necessarily made there to make money, but it does reflect on that maybe some of these parks aren't being visited. And I know that the former commissioner of the DNR had told us at one time in committee that one park in particular, they would be better off handing everybody that came there a $20 bill and closing the park because nobody was visiting it and it was costing the state a fortune. And in fact, that park today just is receiving about $250,000 in this biennium just to keep the doors open. And so that doesn't really make sense. But the point I'm getting at is, you know, every year we spend more money on more land acquisition for parks. Now, if the metro area needs it, I understand that. But in greater Minnesota, when we have almost one park per county, and you add into that the county parks, which do a fantastic job as well, I mean, we've got a lot of parks out there. I don't think you can drive 20 miles without hitting a park in most places. And so I don't want to cut these parks down. I love the parks, but at some point we're going to have to say, you know, maybe we have enough. And looking at some of the dollars that we're spending on key upkeep and in the areas where, whether they're buildings or even campsites, it seems counterproductive to continue to buy land when we already have apparently more than we're using. Thank you.
Ms. Rivers, any?
Madam Chair and members, Representative Green, we will get that information for you, of course. We have made this testimony previously, as you mentioned or alluded to in your testimony. The great state of Minnesota set aside the first state park 125 years ago. It is in your district. It's Itasca State Park. It is one of the crown jewels in the state park system. And as you said, we don't provide public amenities for the state of Minnesota to make money. They are for the public good. We recognize the health and wellness and quality of life benefits that these special places provide. There are times when the revenues do exceed the operating expenditures of those parks, and that's a good thing. All those dollars go into the state park revenue account, and we use those to benefit the entire system for all Minnesotans and the visitors to Minnesota. With respect to land acquisition, the Minnesota legislature does create the statutory boundaries on all Minnesota state parks and recreation areas. We do not buy land outside of those state park boundaries. So that has been through legislative process in order to establish those boundaries. The monies you will see in acquisition here in particular in legacy funds are all within the statutory boundaries of Minnesota state parks that have been set out by the legislature. In the rare cases, and it does happen when we purchase land outside of those legislatively designated state park boundaries, we come back to the legislature, as we've done this year, to have those boundaries revisited. They have to be in statute in order for us to buy outside those state park boundaries. And there's a legislative process as well as a process going to the counties to ensure that there's county consent on any of those acquisitions and the change in the boundaries. So there is a very robust public process. There's a master planning process associated with that. When we're purchasing land for state trails, the same is true. There is an alignment that is determined by statute, and there is also a master planning process with robust public input for those. So that's how we determine where land purchases happen.
Thank you. Senator Green?
Thank you. I'll just address that quickly, because first you said you didn't purchase land outside the parks, and then you said that you do. And I know that you do. And the idea that, just so people know, when these park boundaries were set up, there was a lot of private land within these parks, and a lot of it in my area. And so whether it's inside the park boundary or not, it was still private land. And every time you make a purchase, now you've got more liability for caring for land and property within inside that park that we really don't have the money for. And to the point of should the parks make money, I understand that. But that also opens the door to what I had also previously stated, which is if people are not visiting that park, I mean, if you're getting two or three visitors a month to a park, maybe it's time to look at that and say this is not really beneficial to us when we have another one 20 miles down the road that's being used. So let's put our limited resources where they would do the best good. That was my point. Thank you.
Representative Houghton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And sort of following up on that, I see that in the Met Council presentation, you do have a slide with the number of visits. And I looked back through the others, the DNR and Greater Minnesota. I didn't see any visitor numbers. Did either of you come with those statistics?
Ms. Manson.
Thank you. Within our system, it's a great question. We don't own or operate any of the parks within Greater Minnesota, and not all of them have counting mechanisms in place. We are working with our partners, though, to put those into place where we can, where it makes sense, where we're able to, including helping with counters in some cases. So we, unfortunately, don't have those mechanisms down because of the fact that we just don't own and operate them, but we are working with our partners to get there, and hopefully in the future we'll be able to provide you some numbers.
Madam Chair and members, I will provide those numbers in the report that Representative Green has requested. We typically do provide both overnight visitation as well as day use visitation. We'll also do the multiplier on that and what the local benefits from investment, typically a state park visitor spends overnight more than $25 a day per person. And so we also provide, as well as the operating expenses for those parks, the net local gain for revenues to local communities as well. So I will provide that information to the committee.
And I think the connection I make is it looks like we're over 58 million visitors in the metro area. And if I understood, there are no state parks and trails in this metro area. So if you look at that 40-40-20, that means 60% of the funding is going outside of the Seven County metro area. So just in terms of the number of visitors, obviously that has a huge impact. I can cite my personal experience with one. I mean, with that many people coming, it really takes, those parks take a beating. And then just one question to the Met Council person. Land acquisition, because it's a first-come, first-served, do the 10 implementing agencies all get to decide jointly if there's going to be land acquisition?
Ms. Barajas?
Madam Chair, committee member, the way that the fund works is it's set up as a pool that can be accessed for implementing agencies. Land acquisition, our agencies have taken the approach to do that on a willing seller basis. So working with property owners and negotiating that can take some time in order to get through acquisition. But once they've been able to get to agreement on that, then they come in and request the funds to help pay for that acquisition process. So the funds are ready to be used for them, and we match those funds in order for that to happen. So first come, first serve, consistent with parts of the regional, provided they're acquiring lands that are parts of master plans that have already been identified as part of the regional system.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up, so the implementing agencies don't play any role in the determination of a land acquisition.
Ms. Barajas?
Madam Chair, Council Members, it is the implementing agencies that are doing the acquisition and requesting those funds.
Representative Wagenius has a question as well.
Thank you. Thanks for coming and sharing. I have lots of folks in my district who bike and do a lot of biking. And one of the things that they want an opportunity to do is to bike from the metropolitan area out into our park system, state parks, maybe regional, but state parks for sure. And we don't have that many opportunities for folks to get from the central cities out. And just wondered how much progress you're making on that for a family that would like to get on their bike and go for a weekend and camp maybe along the Minnesota River or someplace like that.
Ms. Rivers? Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and members, Representative Wagenius. Yes, we are making progress on these. I often say it takes a village or a village to build a trail, and it takes a lot of time and patience. It seems like as we move forward in trail development that the easy stuff has already been done. And so what's typically the thing that elongates the timeline on that is acquisition. So yes, we are making progress. There are some trails that originate in the Twin Cities. The most notable of them are Minnesota Valley State Trail, as you mentioned. Of course, the Gateway, Browns Creek up in Washington County, and then the Loose Line heading west out of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And we're working on them piece by piece, attempting to get them done, but it's a slow process.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along those lines, I agree. I think it's important for people to have a destination, to leave the Twin Cities area and actually have some place in rural Minnesota to go and camp and enjoy. And Director Rivers, was there some project that we'd been talking about? I don't remember.
Ms. Rivers? Committee members, Representative Erdahl. Yes, there is an interesting opportunity between the Loose Line State Trail, which I just mentioned, and a state recreation area in your district, Greenleaf SRA. And I have not forgotten your request.
Okay, I just kind of forgot about that.
Uh-huh. All right, we do have someone public comment. Holly Jenkins, if she is here, would come down.
Thank you.
And we are going to limit testimony to 2 minutes because we are running a tight schedule today.
So, Madam
Chair. If you
would
state your name for the record and then begin.
Yep, can you hear me? Yes, and I'll have to go very quickly because I'll try to get this in 2 minutes. My name is Holly Jenkins. Thank you for allowing me to participate here today. I am founder and director of Wilderness in the City, whose mission is dedicated to preserving and enhancing urban natural areas, and our main focus is the Metropolitan Regional Park System, which actually contains, in addition to the nature-based recreation opportunities, also has 30,000 acres of land identified as regionally ecologically significant areas. I'm here today to provide comment regarding the Met Council portion of the Parks and Trails bill and to briefly comment on the project list. I've had the opportunity to meet with several committee members already and also Chair Lilly, and so I will not repeat what I've already discussed, but rather put it in context with this current bill. I would also like to mention that we've talked several times over the years with Met Council staff. We've been told repeatedly that their hands are tied on this issue, which is why we are here at the legislature. The bill, Section 4B, states that money must be used only to fund the list of projects approved by elected representatives. The project list before you actually includes an appropriation from Dakota County for projects that are based on a master plan that has yet to be created. So that update has not even started, so projects obviously have not been approved by the elected representatives, nor has there been any public engagement to date. So approval of this bill without at least that minor change would mean that funding comes before any public input. And based on past experiences, when that funding comes first, it makes a mockery of a meaningful public process. In addition, on this particular segment, while this language undoubtedly was well-intended, it has essentially taken away the opportunity for a comprehensive review and recommendation of projects. As a result, the people who are requesting the funds are the same people approving the projects, and that is an inherent conflict. This process, as you just heard in the testimonies, is different than the DNR and the Greater Minnesota. Both have processes in place that allow projects to be submitted for review and recommendation. It is also different from other legacy funds, which have a process in place for review and recommendation. And we believe it would benefit the citizens of the region if the regional park system approval process was revised to eliminate this conflict.
Thank you, Ms. Jenkins. 2 minutes is up. You can move on.
All right. Representative, we'll complete our testimony. The rest of my testimony, we don't have, you know, we're a grassroots nonprofit. We don't have high-paid lobbyists to help get our message across. I would encourage you and invite you to check out our website, wildernessinthecity.org. We'll have our complete testimony there, and you'll learn a lot more from our perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jenkins. If you would like to, if you would send that to our committee administrator, he can send that around as well. Representative Bowe, one final little itty-bitty question.
Oh, it's an itty-bitty one. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad the Met Council person is here yet. I get all kinds of phone calls and emails from people wanting to know where we're at with the Minnesota River Bluffs Regional Trail that was damaged by the flood in 2014. The detour that's in place is woefully able to handle that and actually very unsafe for people on bicycles. Wondering where we're at in the process of fixing that.
Ms. Barajas?
Madam Chair, Representative, actually I'm going to ask one of my staff to follow up with you on that. He knows more of the details.
Can you introduce yourself for the record and very briefly answer Representative Bull's question, please?
Yes. Good morning or afternoon. Edmund Mullen from the Metropolitan Council. I'm the Regional Parks Manager. The Minnesota River Bluffs Regional Trail was damaged 4 years ago. We are working hard with the Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority, Carver County, and Three Rivers Park District to get that fixed. There is a process in the works that I hope that we can do it this year. It's complicated, but I am confident it's going to happen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Lilly, we do have a quorum now. If you would like to move that House File 653 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Yes, Madam Chair. That'd be my motion.
Any further discussion? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing this. This is a seriously, it's a very beloved part of the legacy bill, and part of what we do as legislators is, and I've kind of seen that show up again, having served on capital investment the last few years. But again, many of the proposals this year are on trails, and interest and love of trails around the state, and we've been really blessed with the peace in the valley, if you will, between the groups here, and at least I feel like I am because I've kind of witnessed kind of the combat years. And but these three groups are really doing great work, and I just want that to be on the record. I love what they're doing in Greater Minnesota, and they're taking their work very serious and doing a great job out there, and hats off to you. And the DNR's been doing a great job, and I think some of this money has gone to amazing things, which you heard about, you know, from all these groups. But the ICANN program, I think, is legacy dollars, for all legacy. And please take a look at that and use that in your legislative stuff to encourage people to get out. And it's just helping people to get out and first steps into nature and getting out there. And then the Metro, I mean, they're it's amazing the use. They're overloved, 50 million users, and it's they may not have the information some of these other places, but they're very loved too and treasured parts of our state. So anyways, I just hats off to all these groups, and thank you for hearing this bill, and I'm pretty sure it'll be pretty solid in our bill.
Chair Lilly renews his motion that House File 653 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Representative Hansen, you're up next.
Good job, Vice Chair Wozlik. I just saw they're handing out pins from the 10th anniversary celebration that we had at the History Center, and so that's where the pins are. Representative Hansen, welcome to our committee. I'd like to move that House File 1924 be laid over for 1928 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hansen, welcome. And we have an author's amendment, A7. I'd like to move that, is that A7 be considered, because I believe it will help you get your bill in the shape, and then we can discuss it further. Representative Hansen, quickly, could you just tell us, is that kind of non-substantial, or is it?
Mr. Chair, we can talk members of the committee, the A7 clarifies an appropriation within the Forever Green. That would be my author's amendment.
So it is substantial. Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'd like to move it, and then we can discuss it more. Any questions to the A7? I'd just like to – all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? your bill is before us, Representative Hansen, as amended, and so go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I want to start with a little bit of memory here, and there are not that many members left who were here when the amendment was approved by the legislature and sent to the voters. There are folks around the table in the committee who were here and were essential in that. I believe Representative Wagenius is the only remaining full member of the House and possibly the Senate who served on the conference committee. Former Representative Frank Moe and I served as ride-alongs on the conference committee. Representative Mary Murphy, the first year when it came, developed the guidebook to give some guidance for projects for clean water that we were looking at these biennial appropriations that were designed to help meet the intent of the funds that were established in that constitutional amendment, protecting, restoring, and enhancing clean water, rivers, lakes, and streams, and a specific separate carve-out for drinking water as a minimum, not a maximum, a floor, not a ceiling. And so a little bit on intent there aren't that many of us that are still around who were here during those debates, both in the committee and on the floor. And I could be corrected Representative Murphy, but I think nonpartisan staff at the time also went back and looked at all the testimony in both the House and the Senate, and obviously there was much more in the House at that time to look at clarifying what people meant in the chamber when they were debating the amendment, rather than what some people may say is the purpose of the amendment. And so those documents, I believe, are still around.
And we could play them.
And available on tape. So I say that before because I often hear, this is what the amendment meant. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And I think it's important that when we do recommendations from any of the bodies and any of the funds, the intent was the legislature sending the amendment to the voters and the voters approving that amendment, giving the authority to the legislature to make those appropriations. So the Clean Water Fund recommendations that are in front of you as the first division engrossment as amended are one of the largest recommendations because of changes that were made by the legislature in the previous biennium, where clean water funds that were appropriated and then swept back and covered by the general fund when there was a positive balance, those dollars went into the Clean Water Fund. So the amount that's been recommended is higher than it has been. In general, the Clean Water Fund, like all the funds, has increased over time as the sales tax revenues increase. So I think you have before you a bill where about 9% of it is different from the recommendations from the Clean Water Council. In general, those changes that were made in the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee dealt with three broad areas. One is including looking at plastics, microplastics and nanoplastics, in the surface and groundwater monitoring that is being done in the bill. And after 10 years of the Clean Water Fund being used, the committee supported a look at microplastics and nanoplastics to see what, how large of a challenge we have dealing with that potential contaminant. Second thing was improving, taking some money from the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, which had an appropriation of $12.5 million the first year and I believe $7.5 million the second year, and having that go into both the Forever Green Initiative, increasing that appropriation so it is $5 million each year, and then also the Wellhead Protection Programs, Drinking Water Protection Programs implementation. And our reason for doing that was that about $140 million has been appropriated by the legislature for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. And Mr. Hagermeyer may be able to update. I think we were at about $30, $35 million that's been appropriated. And that's not any fault of any agency. That's the Farm Bill and the government shutdown and a number of issues that came into play. But the ability to use those dollars for other implementation programs with the Forever Green, the amendment we just did, provides that some of that, more of that, will be used for actual implementation, again, in drinking water areas. We felt that the initial first year of funding for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, we could wait a year. And Representative Hausman, you know I've been supportive of CREP the whole time and all those things, but We can wait and use that for other implementation and still keep that second year of the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. The third larger area is looking more at drinking water, and that the Mississippi River is a drinking water source for many Minnesotans, and having health risk limits be established there would provide for protecting of drinking water. So there are a number of appropriations that were changed to increase that health department drinking water protection. Those are the three large changes that were done. There were additional changes, one specifically for promotional activities for the Clean Water Fund. We felt that that was not an appropriate constitutional use of the dollars that could be done with general fund if it was needed, but the Constitution's pretty clear on what you could spend money for. I could walk through each line if you'd like, but I think you have the summaries.
Chair Hansen, I think that's good. Is there any discussion at this time, or we could go to we have quite a bit of public comment too. So how Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. One of the concerns we have in Greater Minnesota is the continual degradation of the lakes. Programs in here do you think would be most beneficial to helping us clean up the lakes in Greater Minnesota?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl. Well, first, that degradation, I think what I referenced about looking for plastics would help us see if we have a problem there, not just with lakes, but with streams and rivers. And we just haven't had a broad assessment for that. So the issue of degradation, I think there's a need to look at the full question there, if plastics are having an impact on that degradation and what that means. If you look at, we increased, there's already an appropriation for forests for the future. We carved that a little more to be in the Mississippi headwaters area to provide on that appropriation and other appropriations stronger implementation for water. And if I think when you look at both the Forever Green as how we've defined that, but putting money into the cover crops and the DWSMAs, any of those efforts can help with surface water as well as groundwater.
Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, whatever we can do to address the watersheds, you know, I think that's a key to this whole thing, and hopefully there are measures to address the needs of cleaning up the watersheds, because they're, you know, draining into the lakes.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just checking to see when we might get to the A6.
So I think, thank you, Representative Heitzman, as an amendment, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to hear the testimony, if that's okay, and then public comment, and then we'll go into the amendments, if that's okay.
Sure.
Just Representative Heitzman.
Yep, just get some follow-up, Mr. Chair. So yep. I was curious if there were any Clean Water Council folks that are here today that may have comment.
I believe there is. We have a pretty full crowd, and I see their new director nodding his head pretty strongly. So I think he's got that covered. He's not on my list, but yes, he's number two. So,
thank you.
Number one. Okay, public comment. Okay, Representative Heitzman, is that okay? So I think we'll go to public comment. Mr. Gardner, welcome back to the legislature. Now you're being paid big, so we expected donuts. But I'm
the advice of counsel, Mr. Chair, I respectfully refuse to answer on that question.
Welcome back, and it's always nice to see you, and congratulations on your job, and they're lucky to have you, and go ahead, sir.
Thank you for bettering me up, Mr. Chair. Good morning or good afternoon. My name is Paul Gardner. I'm the administrator for the Clean Water Council. I was happy to be a member of this body when we put the legacy amendment on the ballot in 2008, and it's great to see how it's turned out. The Clean Water Council is a group of 17 voting members who are appointed by the governor from various constituents groups set out in statute, and we are also joined by non-voting members, including state agencies related to water, the Met Council, the University of Minnesota, and four legislators, one from each major caucus in each house. So we're very pleased to have the participation of Representative Torkelson and Representative Boginius over many years, and now we're joined by Representative Akam and Representative Heinzman. For the first time, the governor and the Clean Water Council are on the same page with our recommendations. There often have been parallel recommendations, which has been very confusing, but the executive branch is all on the same page with recommendations. and that was House File 1928 as introduced. Since it was introduced, we would have had to shave $1.448 million off of that to reflect a new budget forecast because of the reduced amount. So 1928, as introduced, still would need to have $1.448 million off, and Representative Hansen has done that in different ways. As Representative Hansen has mentioned, the division engrossment moves about 9% of the council recommendations around. We'd always be happy, even though there's no time. I want to make the offer. We can always offer to present the governor's recommendations if you like, but I know there's no time. Our council chair, Commissioner Frank Jewell of St. Louis County, couldn't be here today. He's in International Falls and county business today. But he asked me to point out one particular item, and then I was going to mention another one just in terms of the changes. One is the public engagement process, the public awareness process we had in the recommendations, which is not in there at the moment. We asked for $500,000 to engage Minnesotans about the process on how we spend money in the Clean Water Fund. The 25 by 25 process that was initiated by Governor Dayton really informed the council that members of the public didn't necessarily feel like they were engaged in the issue of clean water as much. And to quote the EQB report from that, it said, Minnesotans acknowledge that education flows in multiple directions and that decision makers, scientists, and government professionals has much to learn from the communities that they serve. That report also recommended that the state create broad media campaigns to build a water ethic and to promote shared values around clean water. So that's why we had that line item. And I know that you have several stops and probably conference committees, so I hope that members will give that some thoughtful consideration. Governor Dayton was very fond of quoting Governor Perpich, who said that none of us is as smart as all of us, or words to that effect. And so we're very interested that we not only think about these issues in St. Paul, but get the input from around the state from more than 5 million Minnesotans who voted for the amendment. In that spirit of none of us are as smart as all of us, I want to raise one other issue that was inserted in the bill, and Representative Hansen raised it on plastics. And I will sound like the Federal Reserve Chairman here and speak very vaguely, but while it's not in our recommendations, which we stand by very strongly, the microplastics issue isn't inconsistent with the spirit of the recommendations of the Clean Water Council in that it is under some existing light items like contaminants of emerging concern and the like. This is an issue that's very much on the public's mind. It's not about whales eating 40 pounds of plastics. It's about plastics that you can barely see and some that you cannot see. Representative Hansen's initiative on this has got us thinking, and the agencies and the council have started to talk to some experts about testing protocols. How do you look for plastic? What does it mean? What's the basis of knowledge right now? And we've discovered that there's a small, although growing, body of knowledge about plastics, its existence in the environment, in our water, in Minnesota in particular, where it's going, where it's coming from, how does it end up in the food chain, and whether it's of any harm to human health. The news we've heard is that there are methods out there to detect it. It can be very labor-intensive and expensive, but Representative Hansen assured me this morning that the language in the bill is broad enough that the agencies have some discretion to, if the bill was to move forward, to limit its scope so that we can actually contribute something to that small but growing body of knowledge on plastics. I'm going to leave it there and see if there are any questions, but Mr. Elverum here from the agencies is here as well, or whoever's got on your list, Mr. Chair. I just want to also mention we did go through a months-long deliberative process for the Clean Water Council, and the council just asked me to say that they hope that the legislature will consider that work that was done to put the recommendations together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner, and Mr. Elverum.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chair. Welcome. Thank you for the welcome. My name is Chris Elverum, and I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm also here representing 68 agencies in the Metropolitan Council who all receive clean water funds. And we've worked really closely with the Clean Water Council over the last year to develop what is now reflected in the governor's budget. And as has been pointed out, much of what's in the bill before you today is similar or the same as what's in the governor's budget. However, there are some significant differences that would impact the ability to continue to systematically address our water resources in the state. So the agencies continue to support the governor's recommendations. And those were developed through, as Mr. Gardner pointed out, a collaborative process with stakeholders and with the agencies. And they really ensure that the purpose of the amendment to protect, restore, and enhance the Minnesota's waters is met. I just have a couple of quick examples here of some of the changes and how they would impact our work. For instance, the proposed bill would eliminate the conservation and drainage management funding. This is a program run through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And it's used by drainage authorities and the soil and water conservation districts to incorporate water quality improvements and water quantity reduction as part of their public drainage system improvements. Its fund is critical as it provides a water quality supplement to drainage authorities' repairs and to improve those public drainage systems as well as protecting our water resources. Another example is a reduction in funding for the tillage and erosion transects, also administered through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. This program creates annual surveys of farmer adoption of crop residue management and cover crops, along with annual estimates of water and wind erosion. And again, it tracks progress toward meeting watershed goals, and without it, or with the reduction, you'd have to give up some of that trend data that you have established over time. One more example, the Pollution Control Agency's River and Lake Monitoring and Assessment Program takes a reduction in this bill, and that would reduce the number of locations and the frequency of monitoring. That data is critical to, for one thing, to ensure that our implementation measures are effective. And also, you need that data so that you can delist impaired waters when the implementation is successful and the water is cleaned up. So that's just a few examples. There is, in fact, I believe, a handout in your packet that has more detail of the impacts of these proposed changes. And we have representatives from each of the agencies here that would be happy to answer questions. And as Mr. Gardner pointed out, right now it doesn't look like the governor's bill is going to be heard here, but if there is a chance to hear that, we'd be happy to come back and provide more detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentleman from Freshwater. Are you Jen? Oh, Jen. Sorry. Not gentleman. Not at all. My apologies. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record, and please go ahead when you're ready.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jen Cater, and I'm with Freshwater, and I'm here to speak in support of the process by which the Clean Water Council recommendations were arrived at. Over the last year, I've had the opportunity to work with 18 different interest groups and agency representatives that are listed on the back page of this report that was passed around just before this part of the meeting started. And largely, this is the same group of people who 14 years ago came up with a blueprint for how to overhaul the state's impaired waters approach. And the conversations that we had this time resulted in recommendations that really focus on updating the vision for clean water funds, narrowing the focus for their spending, and updating the staffing and budgeting process to really arrive at cohesive and broadly supported recommendations at the end of the process. That work is already beginning to pan out, and over the course of the last year, we've really seen what we feel is the Clean Water Council engaging in a much more transparent and iterative process with the agencies in developing the recommendations that came forward. We do recognize that the nature of this process as it stands can make it difficult to address emerging issues as they arise, and that's an area that we feel is available as an example for where we can continue to build on the successes that we've seen over the course of the last year. A couple of other, just one quick example, one of the things that we recommended, and Paul, where did you go? Paul's position was one that was listed in our report as a major recommendation for how we can improve this process, and there are several others that are underway right now as well. So in short, just wanted to come up here and say that we support the Clean Water Council's recommendations, and to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any other comments from the public? Any other public comment? Seeing none. I just kind of want to address one issue before we move forward on the governor's bill, because I believe I'm the author of the supposed governor or the Clean Water Council bill. So I feel like we are hearing it. I feel like this is part of our discussion. It went through the Environment Committee. I watched that committee, and I feel like it was heard strongly there. So it was modified in that committee, and so that's what we're hearing now. So I don't feel it was without hearing. So I think that's a little bit of a misrepresentation of what's happened. So anyways, that's kind of where I'm at is with this committee. Representative Hansen, do you have any comments? I'd be like to hear if you have any comment on, because it sounds like, you know, these groups are really against it, but aren't most of your changes coming from the CREP dollars? And the CREP dollars are just kind of sitting there. And I think we all supported, many of us that have been here for a while, and I'm sure new members would see the value of that and the matching with federal money and all those sort of things. But I think maybe Mr. Hagemeyer could explain that some of this money is just sitting there and we're not able to spend it. And like you said, it's not the fault of the agencies, but it's just sitting there. Is that
true?
Mr. Chair Hansen?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think this is, again, going why I went through the little bit of the history lesson is that things do change between the process of whether it's a council or a commission. And when the effort works, there's emerging issues that come up. There are issues that can be there that have arisen. There's can be issues like the farm bill not being reauthorized or the budget shutdown. So the legislature retains that authority to make changes because there may be changes in information from the good work of citizens on the council. 6 months, 8 months later, it may be a different world with different issues. I do want to point out precedent, if I can, Mr. Chair, that each year for the last 4 years, $11 million of the Clean Water Fund was reappropriated and used for funding general administration of soil and water conservation districts. Part of that is the reason why there's more money in this bill, because the deal with that at the end of session last year was that the money would be repaid if there was a positive balance in the fall's forecast. So two bienniums, $11 million each year, which is, I believe, if we take the whole $22 million, that's a greater amount than any changes in this bill that are occurring.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Mr. Hagemeyer, could you just kind of tell us briefly about this CREP account and just where we're at? And
Mr. Chair, to date, the legislature has appropriated, I believe, $141,291,000 for the CREP program. For the federal match, I believe the recommendation originally was for $150 million. They need another $25 approximately for the roundouts and such for some of the work. So they're approximately $33,700,000. 108,000 short of their target for that, I think, to date. And maybe the agency provide better estimates of what they spent to date. I think they've have about 12,000 acres that they have in process or completed, which is about 20% of the funding or the goal of 60,000 acres. So I would assume approximately 20% of the funding has also been spent, but maybe the board can clarify that.
Thank you very much. I think at this time I'd like to I think we're going to go to the A7 amendment. Is that yours? A6. My apologies. Representative Heitzman, would you like to offer your amendment?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So
I just want to keep us moving because go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've heard a little discussion about the governor's recommendations, and my amendment would restore the funding in the bill back to the recommendations of the Clean Water Council. And the council, we heard a few minutes ago, put an awful lot of work into this. I'm new to the Clean Water Council, but I'm looking forward to the opportunity to serve there and learn a little bit more about what's going on. But there's been a lot of work, like I said, that's gone into vetting the projects, and that work I don't think should be tossed aside to get other projects funded. I think we should avoid a prolonged conference committee with the Senate. We should restore the language that was restored or that was supported by the governor, the council, and the Senate, Mr. Chair. So if we could get a roll call, that would be great.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. We'll do that. Do we have discussion to this amendment? Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I would oppose the amendment, and I think that the changes that were made here, and I'll just in contrast between the changes that were made in the previous few years, which occurred in a conference committee, not out in the open. These changes, you have a division in Grossmont in front of you. These were heard and debated in the Committee of Environment and Natural Resources Finance, and now they're being debated here. That's the democracy process. So the project recommendations, not the program recommendations, but the project recommendations that were recommended, the legislature has exercised changes in those year after year. And we have an emerging issue with plastics that is critical that we have to look at. We have the testimony that there's money that is not going to get spent in the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program in the first year. It could be used for similar implementation programs. And we know that we have a drinking water issue with the Mississippi River, where setting health risk limits will help with that protection.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, just when you talk about the drinking water, actually 25% of Minnesotans use surface water for drinking water, and the portion of Representative Hansen's bill that talks about drinking water covers all of the 25% of Minnesotans. That's 25 water utilities, so it's not just those on the Mississippi. I would also just add that Democracy and Progress, the underlying bill that supports looking at taking care of drinking water, went through both the Environment Committee and Health Committee and Health Finance, and was approved in every committee, or passed through every committee as we do so now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Wozlik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I want to, specifically since I'm on the Ag Committee, I would like to thank you for including in the 1928, the Forever Green money. I think we've talked about that a lot among ourselves on the Ag Committee, and think that's really important that we're investing. We know that our farmers are struggling right now, and this is a program that can really help find new ways to increase productivity and profitability for our farmers, and I think it's really important that we invest in it, not just for that reason, but also because we need to be thinking about the future of ag. And I think that this program really helps us think about what's ahead of us, and what sort of ways we can work to do that. Thank you.
So I just want to make a comment. You know, these things are often hard. You know, they're hard for me. I serve on Lazard Sam, so when I came with the proposal, it's hard when I know different, you know, when we've proposed, there's been proposals to tweak those, present, you know, those bills. In other areas of the funds, this happens. Previous chairs can talk about it, too. I'm sure they've been challenged on different proposals. Should we stay with the RECs or not? But this one's interesting to me because there's quite a few groups that are not all aligned on this. And actually, they were interested in more tweaks if they knew there was going to be some. So that's it's interesting how you bring a broader discussion sometimes when you open doors and windows. But I'm going to vote in favor of this now. I don't know what it'll against, rather. Thank you. But sorry. I was tempted, Representative Heitzman, for a millisecond. But, you know, I don't know what the path will bring, and I'm sure it'll be something that we'll robustly discuss as we go to meet our friends across the street. So with that, Would you be willing to take our roll, please? Our first roll.
Chair Lilly?
No.
Vice Chair Wasilewicz?
No.
Representative Heintzman?
Yes.
Representative Bowe?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Hausman?
No.
Representative Murphy?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wagenius?
No.
Representative Zhang?
No.
We were so close.
All right, 4-6.
So the A7, A6 fails. What is it? Seven?
Four to six.
So
did you vote again?
I voted correctly. Representative Hansen, we have a couple of guests behind you that I think are eagerly standing. I don't think they're on the agenda, but apparently they're not moving.
And so, Mr. Chair, did you have an
amendment? I have an amendment as well. So maybe we should, do we want to hear from them first?
Doesn't matter to me.
Let's just hear from them briefly here first. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susan Stokes. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I also am a member of the Interagency Coordination Team, and I serve as the Department of Agriculture's non-voting representative on the Clean Water Council. I want to make a couple of comments about the changes between from the governor's bill to the bill that's before the committee now, and the changes have to do with more than process. There was a very thorough, rigorous process that went into the Clean Water Council recommendations in the governor's bill, and so that was a very robust process. But the substantive changes haven't really had a thorough discussion, and I want to speak about two of the changes that affect the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. In 1928 as amended, two of the programs at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture have been completely eliminated. One is the Technical Assistance Program, and the other is the Academic Research and Evaluation Program. The governor's budget and the Clean Water Council recommendations for technical assistance was $3.25 million over the biennium. The work done in this program is all on the farm, on the ground implementation for farmers to implement conservation practices, and it stresses peer-to-peer learning. Everything that we've learned in the Clean Water Council vetting process, in the Governor Dayton's 25 by 25 process, in our work at the Department of Ag, tells us that peer-to-peer learning is the most effective way that farmers learn and take advice on how to implement on-farm conservation practices. So the elimination of this program will have a dramatic effect and basically eliminate all of our field demonstration work that goes directly to farmers, thousands of farmers across the state. These projects that are done in this program area range from the Root River Field to Stream Project to the Red River Valley Drainage Project to the Discovery Farm work. And what that means is that the on the ground, on the farm, conservation efforts that we have implemented over years with our on-the-ground partners would come to a halt. For instance, in the Root River Field to Stream Partnership, we have many partners, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts from Houston, Fillmore, and Maurer Counties, the Ag Water Resource Center, and the Nature Conservancy are our partners. Through that work in the Root River Field to Stream Partnership, which is a very vulnerable area of the state, 98% of the farmers in those three sub-watersheds had field walkovers. They participated in field walkovers of their farm to understand what they could do to improve their water practices. As a result of that project, 65,000 feet of grass waterways were installed. 13 new water and sediment control basins and catchment ponds were installed. Planting of cover crops, feedlot improvements. There were 55 field days, 45 presentations reaching over 2,600 people, farmers and their crop advisors and local government representatives. In the Red River Valley Drainage Management Site, we're evaluating the impact of controlled drainage on a farm in northwest Minnesota. Water leaving the farm from that farm travels via private and public ditches to the Red River. The results of the work that we've seen is that there's a 33% reduction in nitrate-nitrogen loss when using controlled drainage, and this has potential to be used widespread in the Red River Valley. Since this project was started, these results were shared at 50 outreach and educational events reaching more than 1,700 individuals. So as throughout these the technical assistance program, we have reached more than 10,000 people, farmers and their advisors and local government representatives, and have had hundreds of these field demonstration and education events. We've also leveraged more than $7.5 million in private, state, and federal dollars to support conservation efforts related to technical assistance. So there hasn't been discussion about this yet, and this is a program that would be entirely wiped out by the House File 1928 as amended. The other program that it cuts from the Department of Agriculture is the Academic Research and Evaluation Program. In the governor's budget, that's funded at $1.325 million for the biennium. That program helps address research gaps, and it revises agricultural conservation practices. As an example, the AgBNP handbook, which has become the standard reference for watershed plans, was developed through this process. And 90% of those funds are passed through, most of which go to the University of Minnesota. So in addition to having had a robust process, the Clean Water Council recommendations and the governor's recommendations are substantively sound, and they're based on they're informed by an extensive vetting process and by the experience on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, any comments?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we're in the 10th year of we've spent $1 billion. I have sat in these committees, and I've heard on the floor that we need to move to implementation and not have to do less studies and less research and more implementation. I think everybody has heard that. You have both the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Department of Agriculture here. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, working with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, provide the technical assistance on the ground. We have multiple agencies working on the same stuff.
Mr.
And at some point, we have to see progress.
Ms. Kadelka, I have another amendment, and it's actually the author's amendment, my amendment, so I'd like to get to it. So please go ahead quickly.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I'll be brief. Angie Becker Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Hansen. Wanted to reply to the conversation on the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, the CREP program. There is a surplus this time around for the Clean Water Fund, and that is a direct result of 2 years ago. There was $22 million that was taken out of the Clean Water Council recommendations and put into the capacity funding for soil and water conservation districts. At that time, the governor said, if there is a surplus to our budget, we will reinstate those resources to the Clean Water Fund. Mm-hmm. Of that, most of those dollars 2 years ago were also taken from the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. And so the Clean Water Council decided this last go-around, to reinstate that, and that is where the $20 million for CREP comes from. The Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program to date has had over $117 million in applications and $110 million funded. And I can get the specific dollar amounts back to Mr. Hagemeyer and to be shared with the committee as well on the dollar amounts spent by the agency. What we've found is that with the biennial appropriation, these dollars are part of the larger strategy in order for the agency to be able to leverage federal dollars at a rate of 2-1 to be able to continue pushing this forward.
Thank you very much. So I'd like to offer the A4 amendment. Representative Hansen, the A4 is an amendment to your bill that I'm offering, right? That I'm offering, and it's changing what is stated now as a reasonable period of time. We're setting a goal for our lakes to be fishable, drinkable, and swimmable by 2040. Which I think is really a great goal. It is past our renewal time, but I think it'll be clear to the voters that we're really moving the needle and that we have goals. And so that's what this amendment is. It's trying to meet our goals of the Clean Water Fund and have a date specific, which I think could be really popular in the public.
A little sooner so I can see it.
You'll be here. I believe you'll outlive me, Chair Murphy, because I'm going to, it's spring, I'm going to be trimming trees again. Representative Hansen.
The chair has a very wise amendment.
Thank you. Any questions to the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The amendment's approved. Thank you, Representative Creed. Any final comments, Chair Hansen? You've got 4 seconds.
It's a good bill. I'd ask for your support.
With that, I'll renew my notion that House File 1928, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion. All those in favor? I guess not. With that, sorry, my apologies. It's laid over for likely. Representative Walzlick, would you be willing to move the minutes from our previous meeting March 27th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any questions to the amendments or to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? We approved our minutes, and I thank you, members. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.